Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. We're going to talk about three of the most popular Book of Mormon geography theories: South America, the Heartland, and of course, Mesoamerica. You won't want to miss this conversation. Check it out. Another theory is the South American theory. I'm going to leave that there for a minute. Now, this is a book by Venus Pritis. I don't know if you guys know Ron Pritis from Signature Books. I like to give Ron a hard time. Venice is Ron's mother, and Ron's not really a believer anymore, and he's kind of embarrassed that his mom wrote this book, but she was a believer in the Book of Mormon. If you look at this map, of course, down the center you see here, this is kind of the Amazon River Basin. And so the idea here with this is that this was all flooded, and so if you look over on the west coast, you've got Peru, and it looks like it's got a narrow neck of land right here. And so if you look at this, then you can say, oh wow, well this makes more sense as far as having a peninsula, a north south peninsula. A lot of the climate matches this as well. Some of the people who support this theory are Venus Pritis and I can't remember, Coker Hands was the first one. I will tell you what, this was one of the first Book of Mormon geography models that I had ever heard. About 20 years ago, my girlfriend, which is now my wife at the time, we went on a trip to Hawaii, and we went to a branch in Hawaii, and the branch president was a big proponent of this model. And so it was kind of funny because he was really a big fan of Venus Pritis. George Potter has kind of some variations on this model as well. And his website's NephiProject.com. There's another guy by the name of Del Dowdell at NephiCode.blogspot.com. So I don't want to say all three of these theories are the same, but they're, you know, as far as locationally, they're very similar. The idea is the Incas were the Lehites or the Lamanites and Nephites. I know that Venus Pritis spent a lot of time kind of like similar with the Baja theory. You know, they brought seeds and the seeds grew in the Americas. The problem with Venice's map here is that this was true about 18 million years ago, so your timeline is a bit off. And of course, I've got a link to the Smithsonian magazine there, and so that's kind of a big problem, you know, being off 18 million years. So that's kind of hard to argue that that's what the land was like when Lehi landed here. So some pros of the South American theory: if you believe that the Amazon Basin River was flooded, then you do have a north-south peninsula. It's at the wrong time period, though. You've got a similar climate to the Mediterranean. The peninsula matches. The distances are an okay match. Church leaders actually embrace North and South America as land of the Nephites. Oh, I didn't mean to leave that Uto-Ategan. That was not... That's a leftover from the Baja theory. That wasn't supposed to be there. Cons, as I mentioned earlier, it's off by 18 million years. You've got DNA problems. You don't have steel. You don't have iron. Are the horses alpacas? I guess you could argue it, but you don't have elephants. Some of I know George especially has mentioned that they have found some iron ore, but it was used in paint. It wasn't used to make swords. And so, you know, the steel swords, that can be a problem. Once again, how did the plates get to New York? You know, there weren't any wheeled vehicles. I guess you could have taken a boat route to get to New York, but that can be a problem as well. And so you'd have to believe in a kind of a two Camorra theory as well. The Heartland theory, I don't know if Jonathan Neville's here. He'll probably correct me on a few things. And I know that Meldrum, May, and Neville kind of all have slightly different takes on this theory, but this is the one that I found kind of gives you an idea of where Zarahemla, Nephi, Lehi's places are, Camorra. one of the benefits of this theory is, you know, this is kind of where Joseph Smith grew up. He was familiar with the legends of the Indians or the Native Americans. And so you can see that a lot of this would have been incorporated with Joseph Smith's thinking. Once again, this looks like a really large section of area. I don't think it fits the limited geography theory, especially that, you know, whether you believe Sorensen or not, you've got to say a lot of the work he's done on distances makes a lot of sense. And so this seems a little bit more spread out than it probably should be. You know, we're talking thousands of miles when it was, we probably should be in the hundreds of miles as far as differences. Once again, it's not a north-south peninsula. It has several candidates for your narrow neck of land. Mississippi or Missouri rivers are plausible for a river Sidon. Lakes could be reasonably construed as seas. It's very near here, the Hill Cumorah, so you've got your one Cumorah theory. I know Rod has spent a lot of time, and I'm going to talk about this in a couple of slides here, claiming that he solved the Middle East problem with the X lineage, and he's going to call that a pro. I'm actually going to call that a con, but I left it in the pros here for now. The mound builder culture likely influenced Joseph Smith. Cons, you've got the elephants, horses, plants problem. The mountain builders just don't have the technology to build a temple like unto Solomon. There were no chariots. There were no wheeled vehicles. Technologically, the mound builders were more kind of Stone Age technologically. Seems unlikely that the Book of Mormon never mentions snow. The climate doesn't seem to match, especially when you're getting into the Great Lakes region. It seems to me, you know, I'm speaking on my behalf, and so people may question this, but I'm going to say it seems like Rod loves to mix science with religion. He will use a lot of quotes from early church leaders that support his theory, and then he will ignore some of the other ones. I know there's a quote where Joseph Smith said, and the South American proponents say, you know, that Lehi landed 30 degrees south latitude, and Rod just kind of ignores that completely. Sorensen basically says Joseph didn't know everything, and so... another problem with, I think, the Meldrum theory, he questions the old Earth. He questions carbon dating because it doesn't match his theory. And a lot of that has to do with DNA, and I'm going to talk about that in just a minute. I already mentioned this. Sorensen mentioned Joseph landed in Chile, then the Yucatan, and then New York. And Meldrum, a lot of times, cherry picks quotes from Joseph and ignores the ones that don't help him. And the cons, DNA problems. So most DNA experts say that Meldrum is misinterpreting the DNA science. And so I've actually got on the next three slides, my three DNA experts, Ugo Perego. He's a population geneticist. Of all the DNA experts, like, this is in his wheelhouse. And he says, as far as the X2A lineage, it's good thinking, but it is not well-founded. The Kennewick man was a skeleton found on the Columbia River in the state of Washington, close to the Canadian border. It's dated to about 8,000 to 9,000 years ago with carbon dating. So once again, this is why Meldrum attacks carbon dating. This Kennewick man has features that look very European. They're non-typical of Native Americans. They did a whole genetic sequence on him. And his DNA is actually Native American. He belongs to X2A, which is the same marker that Rod Meldrum says is for the Great Lakes, but it's found in the northwest coast close to the Beringia Passage. So it's actually farther away from the Heartland theory. It's the oldest X2A found in America, meaning that all the others are a subgroup of that one. So he's been here the longest. His autosomal DNA is also Native American, so he's not European, but he has X2A. X2A has never actually been found in the Middle East. Other X lineages have been found, but not this particular one. X2A is not younger than the other X lineages, meaning it did not come from them genealogically. And then he kind of explains that a little bit more. So X2A is not a daughter of the X's in the Middle East. As of today, they have never found an X2A in any other parts of the world but the Americas. And because the Kinuic man has these features, it seems to me to point more towards a Beringia arrival than the others. Basically, that's the land bridge between Alaska and Russia. I also talked to Simon Southerton. Of course, he's more of a critic. And this is what he had to say. Meldrum thinks that the scientists foolishly overlooked the connection of the X lineage to the Middle East. His whole business is built on the X lineage claim, and he's wrong, completely wrong. It's a very ancient lineage. It's the only Native American, and it's a rare lineage in America. The X lineage doesn't even occur in South or Central America. It has only been found in North America, and that's because it's rare in the populations it came from in Asia. Only a couple of a percent. He says all this brouhaha is about a letter of the alphabet. If they had named it differently or if it had a slightly different naming convention, there would be nothing there because the X is in the name for a huge cluster of very ancient family of mitochondrial DNA lineages. There's the X1 branch, X2, and X2A right through J. So all the other lineages are found in Eurasia somewhere. Most of them are among the Druze, and that's the one Meldrum has paid all his attention to. It's very distant related. They share a common ancestor 30,000 years ago, so his complaint is completely wrong. You know, once again, his time period's off. And that's a big reason why Meldrum attacks the old Earth theories and carbon dating, because it messes up his whole DNA spiel. Thomas Murphy, third DNA expert. He teaches genetics at Edmonds College up in Washington. He says, I think the criticism of Meldrum is appropriate because he's not coming from a scientific perspective at all. He's coming from a creationist perspective. He doesn't even believe the world is that old. So he doesn't think there were people here 30,000 years ago. And anyway, so I think I've kind of hit that pretty hard. So all right, moving on. Boy, I need to get a drink here. All right, Mesoamerican theory. This is Dr. Sorensen's theory. Like I said, this is probably the most, has the most scholars behind it. You've got Sorensen's map on the top. There are other variations like Garth Norman. I'm trying to get Garth on my podcast. He has a different candidate for the River Sidon, and he takes a few issues. But basically, the overall map is pretty similar. You can see you've got the land bountiful, land desolation. Once again, as we look at this, if this is your narrow neck of land, it's more of an east-west orientation than north-south. So that's a little bit of a problem. And I know Sorensen puts a lot in the Yucatan Peninsula as well. Sorensen has a couple of books. You can purchase them there. The bottom one there, An Ancient American Setting for the Book of Mormon, is probably the most scholarly one. You've got Brant Gardner's review. Of course, Brant's a big fan of the Mesoamerican theory. And I would say that the majority of people that believe in a literal Book of Mormon probably support this theory the most. The BYU also put out another DVD. It's also called The Journey of Faith, The New World. So it talks mostly about the Central American theory, Mesoamerican theory. The pros, it's supported by the most scholars. It's the best researched. All other limited geography theories depend on Sorensen's work. Your distances match. He seems to have identified the Olmec and the Maya as the Olmec are the Jaredites and the Maya are the Lamanites, Nephites. Sorensen has identified pre-Columbian contact. Some of the cons, more of an east-west orientation than north-south. Yucatan Peninsula is not really that narrow. The DNA doesn't match. Once again, how do the plates get to New York? Sorensen proposes a two Camorra theory where the last battle took place in Central America and then, Moroni had 30 years to get it to New York. So 30 years, you can move anything. Still have a problem with elephants, horses, plants, etc. So, of course, all of the American theories suffer from that. So anyway, that's what I have. So we can open it up to questions. There's my contact information, and I will also add, I'll stop sharing here in just a minute, I'll go back so you can, if anyway you want to write that down. I will share this PowerPoint with anybody who wants one. I've given one to Paul and Robert Cook and I just kind of wanted to give a broad overview of all of the theories and talk about all of their strengths, all of their weaknesses. You know, there's no theory that answers all the questions. There's no bullseye. For me, it's a fun topic, and I like talking about some of these theories. Oh, I should also mention one other thing really quickly. If I go back to Melee, I was talking to Vani last night on the phone, and she told me that I don't really have a good map of Africa, do I? She told me that she thinks that Moroni could have left from Malay Peninsula, gone around the Horn of Africa, and then to the Atlantic. Well, and maybe stopped off in Madagascar. There are some cities, the Comoros Islands, and something else. Maybe Vani, you can step in there if I'm saying that wrong. But he proposes that it could have been an Atlantic crossing rather than a Pacific crossing. So just wanted to mention that as well. So anyway, let me go ahead and I'll open it up. I'll stop sharing and I'll open it up for questions. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. In our next conversation, I'd like to introduce Richie T from the Cultural Hall podcast, and he's going to interview me.
It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall, and I'm able to sit down with Rick Bennett. Now, you hear that name, and here was the deal. I was talking with my buddy Kurt Frankham over at Leading Saints. He said, have you ever had Rick Bennett on the show before? And I said, no, I haven't. But Rick Bennett is one of those names that I'm like, I feel like I know 10 Rick Bennetts, right? Like, it's a common enough of a name, or like, you know, like I could say out loud, hey, you know Rick Bennett? And I could affirmatively say yes, knowing that somewhere in the culmination of people that I know, there has been a Rick Bennett. But this particular Rick Bennett, he is the host of the Gospel Tangents podcast. So I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about that. He's a church history nerd, so we'll try and avoid getting really deep into that stuff, he and I. But I also want to get a chance to get to know him. Welcome to the Cultural Hall, Rick.
Glad to be on the show. This is great. And now, by the way, I'm the second Rick Bennett in my family, I should say. Not unique. That's
for sure. Are you a junior? Is that how that works?
I am a junior. Yep, that's right.
For those of you who are interested in the entire interview uncut without any interruptions, sign up at patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview for just $5 a month. Also, we have other tiers. If you'd like to subscribe on our website at gospeltangents.com, click on the yellow subscribe button and you can subscribe for $10. You can also do that on Patreon and get a PDF transcript. We've also got some other ones for $15 and $20 if you'd like to get those as well. If you're interested in individual transcripts, go to amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents interview, and you can see our past interviews there in paperback form. So just check out Gospel Tangents. We're always updating those. For the latest updates on Facebook, go to facebook.com/gospeltangents and you can see our latest updates there. We're also on Twitter at Gospel Tangents. Of course, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And please give us a 5-star rating for those of you who listen to audio only. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.